about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now's the time when Stacy's on.
So, Stacy, I figured we'd spend this session talking a lot about... you know, what the Seahawks have been doing in the last few days, maybe a little bit. Let's just recap that 2013 Super Bowl, something like
Let's
that.
Let's do it.
Because there's not really much going on in the way of sports news.
Last time I checked, there wasn't anything that had become a national story, Seattle sports related, for sure.
All right. So if in between now and a couple of minutes from now. Yeah. You search, see if you can find a story, but we have to talk about something prior to that.
Yes.
Something where I think that if you think about when you walk into, when someone actually meets your expectations and you can pick up what you need, you can get what you need from them, you keep them around. And when someone doesn't, you get rid of them if they don't meet your expectations.
Yeah, that's right.
And sometimes you just have someone or have something for a short period of time while you need them, and then you get rid of them. And that's what you do when you're actually renting something, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're making it sound like murder, but I think that also what you're talking about is Star Rentals. And Star Rentals, just for anyone who doesn't know by now, A, you've been living under a rock.
Right.
And B, Star Rentals is not only a sponsor of Seattle Sports at Night, but also the preferred supplier to the West's best contractors. And what I was thinking the other day, Mike, is... as I have been on the dating scene, not really this past year because of COVID and such as, but more so in years prior, you realize that like when someone's like, what are your hobbies? Sometimes you're like, I don't have hobbies.
Right.
And what I realized is I do have a hobby now.
What is it?
It's Star Rentals.
It's Star Rentals. Of course it is. And in fact, let's just carry that one step further. Mm-hmm. Star Rentals, is it a swipe left or a swipe right?
Swipe right. Super like. Send a message immediately.
Yeah, right.
And then
that's Star Rentals.
And then panic when they don't message back.
For the next 3 hours.
And it's like, of course, it's Star Rentals. It's probably a bot. It's probably not even real.
Yeah. Or they're just busy. maybe there's a lot of swipe
Star Rentals
right.
Says, hey, Stacy. And I say like, hey, what's up? So what do you do for work? And it never responds.
Exactly.
Because it's out of my league, but it shouldn't be out of yours.
Exactly.
Star
All right.
Rentals.
Star Rentals.
Star Rentals.
There you go.
Okay.
I found
something to talk about.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Let me see.
What might that be?
On the Google. No, there's obviously huge news. This stems from an interview that Kevin Mather, who is the CEO and president of the Mariners. It's okay. It's not the end of the world if you didn't know who he was, but you're about to know.
Was. Gotcha.
He was. I'll tell you why he was.
All right.
So in a video... In a Zoom call with the Bellevue Rotary Club, I didn't know what a Rotary Club was. It's not related to the Rotary phone.
Okay.
I learned that, and I thought maybe it was related to propellers.
To all these old people who have the same old phones.
A love of Rotary phones.
Love Rotary. Do you even remember Rotary phones?
Yes. Now, Rotary phones are the one with the circles on it.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
The circles. And then the little circles within the circles.
Oh, I don't know.
It's a big dial, and then there's a place where you put your finger.
Yeah. And then but then what I wonder is when you mess up halfway through, do you hang up and start all over again?
Well, so here's an interesting thing, and I think this is an apropos point to make given the conversation we're rolling into. One of the things I miss about rotary phones is that somebody had their number, and you had to wait for the dial to wind back, and then you dial the next number, and then you'd wait.
Oh, I don't know.
So the whole process of dialing was much slower. But you thought about it before you said the wrong thing in the heat of the moment. And here we go.
Okay, here we go. So this conversation is from February 5th. It is a Zoom call where Kevin Mather is presumably a guest speaker, I'm assuming, for the Bellevue Rotary Club. And so it's these, you know, people at this club that over a conference get to ask him all kinds of questions about the Seattle Mariners.
These are usually, for those of you who have not been to a Rotary Club event, whenever they get a sports executive, given the type of people who are in Rotary Club, it's a popular one. Like, those are the ones that really, really draw in a lot of the members because they never get a chance to talk to these execs for sports teams. Well, they did this time.
I don't know where this video was for the last 2 weeks or so, but it was making the rounds so it started, I think, Sunday morning. This video is posted. A link is posted to Twitter. Just this like random kind of tweet. Oh, this interesting video with Kevin Mather. Then it gets picked up by this SB Nation Mariners blog named Lookout Landing. And there's this comment where someone says, okay, so here's all the stuff I'm taking from this video. All of a sudden, those notes that someone on Lookout Landing took from the video start going viral, because the stuff that is said in the video from Kevin Mather is stuff that is unheard of, unprecedented to hear a team high-ranking executive say openly about a team. For instance, this isn't even the offensive stuff yet. Let's just talk about the basic stuff.
All right.
In this interview, he says that they offered a current minor leaguer, Jared Kelnick, one of their top two prospects, a 6-year deal, and then he rejected it because he didn't want to commit past free agency. So then he says, we don't want to mess with service time, so Kelnick and Logan Gilbert are going to be brought up. Now, all of that is really to say that it is very weird to hear executives talk about deals they offered players that were not taken. It's very weird to hear them talk about manipulating service time, because it is incredibly frowned upon. And there have been grievances filed against the league that have not been won because it is so hard for players to prove that service time was manipulated.
And can we take an aside?
I'll explain it.
All right.
Okay.
Time.
So service time, to gain a year of service, a player needs to be on the major league roster, so on the Mariners, not their minors, for 172 days,
which is
over 90% of the year. So if a player spends fewer than that, even if he's on there for 171 days, he has his free agency moved back a year. So there's incentive for clubs to essentially keep guys in the minor leagues until they pass that threshold. So you can have most of a year from a player, but it doesn't count this kind of clock that starts when he's going to be a free agent and you're going to have to pay him a lot more money.
I didn't know about that. That
kind
seems
of gross.
Kind of sinister, yeah.
A lot of teams do it. It's really hard to prove that they've done it, because teams can easily say, look, we thought you needed more time. We thought you needed a couple more at-bats. And a lot of these guys that they're calling up, especially if they're really good, are going to be phenoms that aren't going to maybe have as much time in the minors as some other guys.
Right.
So it's easy for teams to be like, oh, you're 21 years old. We need a little more time for you. Sometimes there is genuine effort there from teams to make sure that a guy doesn't get brought up too soon, which hurts people's confidence. And there have been careers that have been set back because of that.
And ruined.
And then there have been instances of teams very clearly playing with this service time clock to basically get not a free year of service, an extra cheap year of service from a player.
Right.
And players do not like this. Understandably so. So he basically says in this video, again, there have been grievances filed by players for this that they have not won because there's no evidence. He basically says, we didn't want to start this service time clock, which is baffling,
right,
that he openly admitted this. And then, so that's not even the most controversial part. So you've already presumably upset one of your top two prospects, Jared Kelnick. This is who you're pinning your hopes on for
right.
the franchise. Another prospect, and this is one of the more controversial pieces of what Mather said over this 45-minute conversation. Another prospect you have is Julio Rodriguez. He is younger than Kelnick, but these are the top two prospects, two of the top five prospects in baseball.
In all of baseball,
and also the two top prospects in your organization. These are the two guys that you are telling fans, hey, this year is going to be tough. Last year was tough. We're promising you that we're building a World Series team, and we're going to build it around these two guys. You managed to insult both of them in this. So you insult Kelnick by saying, basically, we're manipulating your service time, and kind of, it seems like, making some slights at him for not taking that deal, kind of implying that, like, oh, you're too good for it. And it's like, or he's just, it's his right to do that.
Right.
The other comment is about Julio Rodriguez. So I'll play the sound really quick. So Kevin Mather is asked by someone, tell us about Julio Rodriguez. That's the question. This is his response.
Julio Rodriguez has got a personality bigger than all of you combined. He is loud. His English is not tremendous.
So that understandably drew a lot of controversy because, first of all, that's, you have a kind of a softball there to say,
right,
Julio is one of the strongest hitters in the minors. We think he's going to be a great outfielder. This kid has so much energy and personality. He's a
five
face of the franchise player, type guy, five tool
of,
player.
Whatever.
And instead, one of the first things you say is his English isn't tremendous. And there are people that might be hearing this saying, well, who cares? I mean, maybe his English isn't tremendous. Why is that offensive? Well, it's offensive for a lot of reasons. First is the underlying assumption that that is funny,
right?
Which is weird and a little nativist. And
or
also,
germane in this particular case.
Exactly. There's also just the fact that Julio does speak English and speaks English well. Is so well, in fact, that he hosts a web series on the Mariners YouTube page in which he interviews players in English, and he's also translated for Spanish-speaking players to English. And so what it sounds like is someone that just doesn't know a basic thing about his top prospect.
Right. Yeah. Or
the most important player in the organization right now, in addition to Jared.
Or has sort of had a cursory knowledge and then doesn't really actually know the person well at all.
And also treating it like it's funny is kind of messed up.
Absolutely. So all of this then and more.
Oh, there's so much more, Mike. I mean, I'll skim over it quickly.
Okay.
So he called the top pitcher in your organization boring. He said,
do you actually see his Twitter feed?
Yeah, he changed. Marco Gonzalez is the pitcher that was called boring.
The one in all those promo ads you hear here on Cairo.
And he changed his Twitter bio to very boring.
Which was pretty
amazing.
Funny.
Go Zags. He also he said that your veteran most player, a leader in your clubhouse, Kyle Seager, is probably overpaid. Whether or not you think of that, you shouldn't be saying it because you're part of team ownership and the CEO of your team. And what you say is seemingly to a player what the organization thinks.
Right.
It gets worse. He said another one, and this is kind of in addition to Julio, the other really controversial thing that he said was about Hisashi Iwakuma. Iwakuma is a former incredibly accomplished pitcher who is coming back to the organization as someone helping the organization. Mather, though, took it upon himself, again, unprompted, to complain about paying Iwakuma's interpreter.
It frustrates me. For instance, we just rehired Iwakuma. Iwakuma was a pitcher for us for a number of years. Wonderful human being. His English is terrible. He wanted to get back into the game. He wanted to, and he came to us, and we quite frankly want him as our Asian scout interpreter. What's going on in the Japanese league? He's coming to spring training, and I made the statement, I'm tired of paying his interpreter.
So he goes on to kind of imply that Iwakuma is pretending to not speak great English, because when he tells him, I'm not paying for your interpreter anymore, $75,000, by the way, it's just like a breaking the bank for a multi-billion dollar organization. But he tells him, I'm not paying, and then he says, and his English suddenly got better after that, kind of laughs about it. Again, Iwakuma is a very accomplished player, former player. He is coming in an advisory role or as someone who is going to help your organization be better, in particular because of his relationship with Japanese players that you will be going after.
Right.
And the one of the few advantages this organization has had is that pipeline, and in no small part because of Iwakuma, but also because of Ichiro.
Right.
One of the most well-known players, period, but also Mariners in the world. And it's been one of the few advantages you have for a team that has not made the playoffs in nearly two decades.
Right.
You've been able to say, but at least we can go out there and compete. When top Japanese prospects or players are on the market.
And let me just say as an aside, just say he is unhappy about having to pay a translator they don't feel like they need. Let's just set that aside as a possibility, but not necessarily justified. Why wouldn't you, though? Because he's going to be pointing you at all kinds of athletes who might also need a trend. Why wouldn't you just have that person on your team anyway? Just look at the number of players there.
For anyone,
it's why wouldn't you have a Korean translator? Why wouldn't you have this is absolutely asinine.
One of the best things about baseball is how beloved it is all over the world.
Yes.
And that it is a multicultural sport, even in the U.S.
Yes.
That on every single team that you go to, any Major League Baseball team in Major League Baseball clubhouses, multiple languages being spoken, people from multiple countries.
Right.
It is one of the coolest things about this sport.
It's one of the cool things, honestly.
Because it's embraced everywhere.
Who are maybe not fans of the Mariners, but are of the Sounders, same thing. And if you go to any major soccer club in the world, same thing. It's been like this everywhere. I mean, in the United States, we've had Latin American ball players for only 50 or 60 years and longer than that, actually, for some who just weren't talking about it much. And it's crazy to me that people just don't still get it.
Like, and it's not weird.
That's the only growth area of the game,
it
too.
It is incredibly common to have, first of all, the best players come from all over the world.
Right.
They are not just players who are born in the U.S. Like, some of the best players in baseball history have not been from the U.S. It is not weird at all, therefore, for clubs to have multiple interpreters. And sometimes players will interpret for other players.
But
Nelson Cruz was amazing.
I'm not going to give him an out here.
Okay.
Because I think his point is not terribly well thought out. He felt like, and maybe because it's in Bellevue, and maybe because it's Bellevue Rotary Club, he felt like he was among equals or contemporaries. And that's when these folks relax, right?
So, yeah.
And so I think that had a lot to do with it for a variety of reasons. He looked around the room and saw a lot of him. Mm-hmm. And that's why he had this conversation, I'm guessing. Now, I don't know. But I would say this about the whole thing regarding English. Now, my mom is not a native English speaker. She had to learn in like sort of the brutal immersion plan. She was in a school. Her mom and dad put her in an English Catholic school. This is in Colón in Panama. She did not speak any English. She went in and had to learn. I mean, and I'm not saying because she didn't. She ended up being not only so fluent. My dad is from Texas. I've always referred to them as both having English as a second language. And my mom's English was so good that she actually did legal contract translation for the United Farm Workers and people like that. So all of that said, though, she was one of those people who advocated, like, if you're there, you really should learn the language because you're limiting yourself in many ways. And I think also, so I watch a lot of like international motorcycle racing. And one of the things I'm always impressed with is when some 18-year-old kid may say he wins a race, he's getting interviewed and he's a French kid and he's managing to get through an English language interview or a Japanese kid is managing to get through an English. And I'm like, man, I couldn't have done that at that age. Like, how good they are. But these teams also, and I'm assuming that sports teams do too, provide coaching because they know that from a marketing standpoint, where they want to really have this player get popular, which means more money for the player and for them, is to get their language skills up. Now, I'm not excusing anything that he said, but the inherent desire. I mean, when Greg LeMond was a cycling champ, the first American to ever win, now technically the only American to ever win the Tour de France, he actually studied French, even though he was like a kid on a cycling team because he felt like it was. And when he first did interviews in France, the French people went nuts. They were so happy that someone would bother. He also had weirdly, he had a French last name, which he actually wasn't French. But nonetheless, I can see the desire for a team, if you are in a U.S.-based English-speaking league, to want that. But it just seemed like his whole approach to it was not actually
From that
perspective whatsoever.
Right. And I, again,
does that make sense?
1,000%. I'm not in his mind. And again, I should preface this by saying there are so many good people within this organization that want the best for the team. Should we break?
Yeah, let's take a break for a quick commercial. And then we're going to come back because we are not even close to being done with this one.
I haven't even told you about the parking garage.
No. All right.
Oh, just
all right.
Wait.
Coming back for the parking garage, folks. Stay tuned for the parking garage. We'll be back right after this message. We let them hang on this whole parking garage idea. What's the parking garage?
Well, let me quickly add one point about Julio Rodriguez. He, to your point, it does help to be able to speak, first of all, multiple languages. And secondly, like, it will be easier for interviews if you are more fluent in English. I think that it was also it felt so dismissive to so many people, including Julio, presumably based on his social media reaction, because he's taken it upon himself at a young age to really throw himself
not
into this.
The problem.
No, there's a fantastic interview in The Athletic. I think it's written by Corey Brock. Another one that Larry Stone does for the Seattle Times, where they talk about Julio requesting that interviews be in English so that he can practice doing interviews fully in English, that he's been able to do that successfully. And there was this one excerpt in The Athletic where it's like, after his first interview doing it fully in English, he was so excited that he like was like, I'm going to go call my parents and tell them this. And he's so young. Imagine like you're 19.
Exactly. That's the thing.
In this, it's in crazy situation. And you're like, I am multitasking the heck out of my job.
Well, and on top of that, what people also forget, and this is one of the things, since I do watch a lot of international sports, you start seeing even people talk about, like, when you're receiving instruction from a coach and they don't speak your language, it is very like everything, single part of your career is more difficult. There's a strong incentive for everyone to learn it, but again the former.
Well, and CEOs. Let's be honest about a lot of the a lot of what is implied when people make fun of non-native English speakers is that by not speaking English fluently, you are less intelligent.
Right.
Like there's
totally.
A trope in Hollywood of someone that speaks more broken English that is therefore not as smart because of it. Like it is a very racist trope that exists. So you have to consider the history of when you say stuff like that.
Oh, completely. So, completely.
Okay, so let me get to the parking garage stuff. This is the stuff that I can believe why we're not talking about it more, but this is the point in the interview when I was kind of like looking around, like, is this happening? Kevin Mather here is asked about what's one thing you would change. What's something you would change? What's on your mind? What keeps you up at night? This was his answer.
I worry about the neighborhood. We have employees that show up at 4:15 and leave at 10 o'clock at night, and they don't park, and there's not enough parking, so I can get away with charging $30, $40, $50 to park in my tiny little parking garage across the street. So I don't let my employees park there. I have them park down on the other side of CenturyLink, it's not, but I'll call it CenturyLink. And so I hire police to escort them to their cars as they check out, punch out, and they walk in groups and they're escorted with police. We got to do something about our neighborhood.
Now, there are a lot of things that go into this.
Right.
Some of them I will not go into. We just don't have time to go into it as to why in his mind the neighborhood might be what it is. But you're asked one thing that keeps you up at night. Initially, it sounds fine. I want it to be a neighborhood where people feel safe. Sure, everyone wants that.
Right.
Your answer is, there's so little parking, I get away with charging a ton for fans to park there, which reads, if I'm a fan, like you're taking advantage of fans.
Right.
And then I guess I kind of, now I'm implying what he's meaning. He's not saying this. This is how I took it.
Fair enough.
So I guess I don't love paying for security for my employees. I'd like for my employees to walk safely a mile to their car.
Right.
Not me have to pay for security for them to get there.
Or for me, I mean, I don't know how many employees they have, but especially in the off season, why not just give them parking? You know, you can do that if you're spending so much on security. It sounds to me like the security is a pretty decent deal. Yeah, that's just kind of, again, I don't know. You know, it is, I get it that the Soto area isn't always great. It's not really as bad as some places in town. And I can understand if you're walking there late at night and back to your car, it is great that they have them in groups and they have, but it seemed like, again, like, but honestly, where I was stopped on this whole thing was, that's your biggest worry? Like, that is your biggest worry? Are you kidding me? Really? Wow. Wow.
We haven't made the playoffs for so long, and I'm so bought into this idea we're going to get back to
We've
it.
We've never been in the World Series.
And I worry that I'm going to finish my time here, and it will all have been for nothing because we won't get there. That's just one minor thing. Obviously, there are millions more important things.
COVID, world peace.
Exactly. Oh, entering another, entering a season where we're going to have labor conversations and a pandemic.
Right.
I just wonder how we're going to be able to handle this and keep a great relationship with our players, keep everyone healthy.
The billions of non-English speakers worldwide. I mean, the whole thing that he could have been like, imagine he stays up late at night.
All the interpreters.
What is all these interpreters he's going to have to pay? And sometimes interpreters and then security for the interpreters. Like, where does it stop?
God.
Where does it stop?
Yeah, so Kevin Mather has since resigned.
Yep.
And there's all kinds of other conversations to come from this, like the fact that John Stanton, the chairman, was asked, if Kevin Mather would not have resigned, would you have fired him? And said, well, I didn't have to fire him because he resigned, which for a lot of people made them really upset.
You know, and Kevin, I don't know, did you ever talk to Kevin Mather at all?
No, I've heard good things about it. I have heard that Kevin Mather is, at his core, just like he's a Mariners fan.
Right.
He and PR isn't his strong suit.
Right.
I think that this was a flubbing and hopefully and less of like a genuine belief. I also know that there are, again, this is what I said. What's frustrating about this for people that cover the team is knowing how many good people there are within this organization, players, coaches,
right.
People in the front office, people working like media. I know people in marketing and media, right?
Right.
That's like who I'm talking to. They love this team.
Right.
Love the team, love the city, love the players. And it's unfortunate that they get stuck cleaning up this mess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, hopefully all of them have different biggest fears than the former CEO of the team. I mean, hopefully they are all more oriented on the things that actually make the Mariners win a few more games and maybe get in the playoffs, which would be lovely. Maybe even a World
That'd
Series someday.
That'd be
great.
Fantastic.
So last question, because we don't have any much more time. Do you feel like his attitudes and his, because remember, we have had this conversation about there's really very few constants in the Mariners about why this team has never really mm-hmm. gotten to that place that mm-hmm. it should have. And one of those tends to be at the ownership level. Do you feel like he was unintentionally a representative of a management ethos that may be a bigger problem than just one man?
I don't know that he is representative of the rest of upper level ownership or management with the Mariners in particular.
Right.
I don't think his point of view as a wealthy, kind of detached, I don't mean to make this sound personal, but the way that he sounded to me.
Right.
I don't know that point of view that he has where it sounds like there's contempt for players who want to advocate for themselves and make
right.
money, contempt for fans who want cheaper things
right.
or affordable parking, contempt for paying interpreters. I don't think that those kinds of beliefs are isolated. And that's tended to be the stance that, for instance, the players union has taken. They have since spoken out about this and been like, thanks for shining a light on how we feel a lot of owners and team presidents feel.
Right.
That there are labor disputes because inherently there are people who care about winning and their own careers and legacies. Right. Right? There's still a focus on me at either of these levels.
Sure.
And then there are people that care about a bottom line.
Right.
And if winning gets you the bottom line, great. If saving money does, great. Those are two tropes about
right.
people that aren't true at every level. There are owners that deeply care about players. There are players that maybe don't care at all about, you know, anyone else but them. Who knows? I think that, though, we know enough about just how society, specifically like what privilege gets you,
right,
that I don't think it's weird to assume that there are people that think just like Kevin Mather and that that's a problem.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely spot on. Wow, that was a lot to talk about. We'll probably get this one playing out for a couple of days here. All right, Stacey, thanks. We'll talk tomorrow.
Bye.
Ooh, that is a big one this weekend. All right, folks, coming up, our final thoughts for the evening. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. This is it for the evening. Not it for the week, not yet. But we do have a little bit of, I don't know. It'd be exaggerating to say wisdom. It would be undercutting it to say trite. So I'll just say whatever's left over tonight that we've got left to say. Shane?
I am waiting on a text back from my boss up at the Hill. It looks like we're going to be closed tomorrow. So that means one of two things for me. It means I either get to stay home and sleep, or I get to go to work and do some shoveling with no guests and then go sit back and watch a helicopter blow up a bunch of avalanches.
What would you prefer?
That's the thing. I'm conflicted right now because extra sleep does sound nice, but I mean, watching those guys so dynamite into a giant mountain and watching that thing explode.
Hard to pass up.
It's very hard to pass up. Everybody likes explosions.
Absolutely. A very guy thing.
Yeah, it's so much fun. So that's what's on my mind tonight.
Frank?
I am. I had a parental moment today where my daughter called me from Florida. She, over Christmas time, she really wanted a lightweight but warm Patagonia kind of a jacket, mm-hmm. which we got for her to the tune of pretty close to a couple of $100. She called me today to tell me that she'd lost it down in Florida. Don't know if she wasn't sure whether it fell out of her pack or whether she'd set it down and somebody grabbed it or she just left it behind in the calf, but it's gone. And it's one of those parental moments where you sit there and say to yourself, okay, how am I going to react to this? Right? And I know how my parents would have reacted, and it was not good. Right? So I did not react that way. Instead, I just basically said, you know, we make mistakes. These kinds of things happen. You don't know what really happened to it. It's okay. And figuring that she's probably beaten herself up about it much more than I would if I really started in on her. But as in all parenting things, I'm not sure that I did the right thing. Any wisdom from you two?
I think you handled it pretty well. I mean, it definitely happens. I mean, I've definitely misplaced some pretty expensive stuff, and I've beaten myself up over it a lot.
I'd say it was a missed opportunity to tell her to not to bet on Huskies men's basketball. I'd say that's probably what happened here. They just got stomped. And I would say, you know, or at least just understand the spread a little better before you put that dough down. That's what I would say.
Okay. Fair enough. How about you, Mike?
I am just still geeking out on and I tweeted this out earlier. If you're on Twitter, you can find me at MikeLou65. A really just a spectacular photo. Again, I'm going to bring up the Mars rover once until annoyance happens, which may already be happening for you. But I am digging that project, and it was this spectacular photo of from the surface of Mars with what you can see up there is three points of big points of light, Jupiter, Venus, and Earth. And it is actually
cool,
spectacularly cool. It really is. It's very vivid and really, really great. And you think about what it would be like if you were there looking back at that. And I think it'd be extremely lonely. I think I got homesick just looking at the picture. So I don't know about you, but I am going to dig as these photos keep spooling out. I am going to be paying a lot of attention. I won't inflict all of them on you, but from time to time, I can't help myself. All right, folks, thank you again for joining us here at Cairo Nights. We will be back at you tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Danger. Take a look over.